The shadow will find its way out. And I know from experience too, if you don't face it, it will come out in behavior that could, yet you are so surprised. I don't know how that happened. So I think that's a lot of the fear of shadow. That's why I love doing it, because I think it's healthy for our society and for community.
Hey, everybody. This is the Voracious Student Podcast. I'm your host, Dania Milambert, and my guest this week is Faye Simpson. Faye is the artistic director and co-founder of Impact Theater Company, and she is also a teacher. She has taught at the NYU and Yale graduate acting programs, Michael Howard Studios, many other places, and she also created The Lucid Body and is the author of the book, The Lucid Body, A Guide for the Physical Actor. It's a unique physical training method that she teaches in New York and all around the world and has been doing for 20 years. So we dive into it in the episode, so I'll let her explain what it is. But on this episode, we tackle a specific part of it specifically, which is the shadow, partly because I think it's very relevant to the times we are living in. And it's something that I felt I sort of skipped over when I did my initial bulk of training with the Lucid Body. So I think all will make sense in the episode. Enjoy my interview with the wonderful, inspiring Faye Simpson.
So for those people listening who have never had any experience with the Lucid Body, what is the Lucid Body?
The Lucid Body process was created for actors as a psychophysical process to allow them to deeply embody character from a visceral place, not from a mental place, you know, what they think a character is experiencing. So it was created in order to get the actor to first understand their own body and the complexity of their own body first. And with that, of course, it is a therapeutic process. It is a process for anyone interested in self-growth, but for the actor especially, because then when they're ready to look at character, they have a physical experiential understanding of the complexity of the character. So we use the tools of the chakra centers. And chakra centers, it's a word that can put people off that don't understand them. They may think it's just like, oh, rainbows and, you know, crystals. But they're actually the same centers that Stanislavski talked about, same centers that Michael Chekhov talks about, and that Meisner talks about. They're just the centers of the body that are connected to the intention of the body's biology. So organs, endocrine glands, nerve plexi are connected to complex messaging service that goes up to the brain and creates hormonal response. And so each center is connected to a different part of that impulse response. So I always say that the chakra is, it receives information from the outside world. It assimilates that information, nervous system and up into the pituitary, and then it expresses a response. So with the understanding of these centers, it's kind of a way to pick apart the human complexity so that there's a way to start. So the root is connected to our survival instinct, and then the pelvis is connected to our intimacy, and then the solar plexus to our power and ego, heart to our compassion, and fifth is our throat, and then sixth is the brain, and seventh goes up to the divine. So it's a simplistic, in a way, it's a simplistic way to break apart human behavior so that the actor can look at the given circumstances of a character and say, in the given circumstances of that character, character was an orphan, how is their root center going to be connected? And then they can literally embody the given circumstances with these tools.
How it's been enormously helpful to me, I mean, I did the bulk of my training in it over 10 years ago, and then I've seen you periodically since then, is that once you've immersed yourself in it, it can be a very quick way to take an adjustment or give yourself an adjustment. I translate all sorts of things as like, well, maybe if I came from my heart here, or maybe if I tapped into my first chakra, that will, it can adjust vocal things, it can adjust intention things in a way that's very quick and very visceral.
Yes, it's a very, very practical, it's a very practical tool for actors once they commit to learning the vocabulary.
Yeah, and I don't think it leaves you. I think once you've done it, it stays with you, which is wonderful.
I'm always happy to hear actors who are on the set and they have their little stick figure, their little physical diagnosis on the side of their script, or they have their I don't know if you remember the stick figures, but we have a stick
figure. Yes.
In circles, and it's exploded or imploded or balanced or spastic, and it's, you know, people put it up in the dressing room to remind themselves of the layers. The layering is the real juice of the material. I have separated it into three layers just so it's actor friendly, but the persona, which is the mask, is kind of, it seems like a negative word, but the most social personality of the character. It's the hero, or, you know, the lover, or the Vaught Meiser. And then underneath that, you have a shadow, and the shadow is that which the character is working against. They don't want anyone to know about their addiction to drugs or money or sex, and they work against that with their persona. And then there's the child need, and child need stems all the way back to the childhood of the character. And many times we don't know that in the play or the movie, but the actors research, like, what was that childhood like? Because the somatic body, the nervous system of a person is set in that childhood. I find it's a very important layer, and it's one of the more challenging layers for an actor to face in themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking at King Lear, and I was thinking about how important it is to think of what that man was like as a child. So much of it makes sense if you think about his childhood. But of all those you talked about, I'd love to zero in on the shadow today. As much as I said that the chakra work has really stuck with me, as I was revisiting the book in preparation for this interview, I feel like probably due to my own resistance and fear, I don't really remember the shadow training as much. And then as well, in this time of the world, I feel like I've really been wrestling with my own shadow in all sorts of uncomfortable ways as I've been living at home and seeing what I really think about things. And I think collectively as a country, we're going through a lot. So in terms of our shadow, there's a shadow exercise that you do in class. How would you describe that shadow exercise to a student? What would you ask them to do?
Well, just to back up a little, the Carl Jung is the shadow work that the information came from Jung and his understanding of the unconscious. Jung and Freud would talk about shadow as being more of the unconscious, the part of self you see in dreams. But you, for the actor, because many of our characters may be unconscious of their shadows, but we as the actors who are playing those characters have to be conscious of them. I've heard that the further away the shadow is from the persona, meaning if the persona has no idea about the shadow's feelings and intentions, then you have a kind of psychosis. You have a psychotic, because you have a persona who one day picks up the gun. You know, we've heard stories like that. Some guy, good job, good house, everything seems fine, but he's so disconnected to that which is underneath that he pushes it away. I mean, our ego is a very powerful, our habitual ego that protects ourselves from trauma and feelings that were from the past is so powerful and so based in habit. It takes a brave soul to really look and uncover, which I think is what's happening to our country right now. But so we'll get more into that. But that shadow project, what I say to students is, think about people that you are disturbed by and you have no compassion for, because you can usually then find your shadow. So if, for example, I saw an addict on the street, I might have compassion for them. I understand the addict in myself. If I see a homeless person, I might have compassion because I understand what it means when things go wrong. I could be that person. But if I saw somebody who was, let's say, rough on their kids in public, like smack their kids, I'd have no tolerance. Absolutely none. I judge them. So take away all like good and bad people for a second and just take that example. So then that sense of aggressive, violent behavior could possibly be a shadow for me. And so then I would have to look at that and think, oh, actually, yes, anger is something I avoid. I don't like it in people. I judge people who are free with it. I actually grew up in an environment where anger was not acceptable, especially for women. So now I'm going to have to go into that exploded root and start to find it. And so this shadow project, if I were the student doing it, I would then have to create a character whose persona was exploded one. So you find your shadow and then you create a new character. So if my character is exploded one, let's say they're an executive with a hot temper, yelling at everybody. So maybe I'll play a male because that's further away from me. I'll play a male executive. Then I have to write a biology because what I need to do is figure out what that executive's shadow is. So let's say that executive's shadow had an abusive father. So then I would work on creating that victim, that abused child, that victim underneath it. I would rehearse that part. And so that persona, that executive who fights for everything is something I am that's deserved. And in that exercise then, I have to play and face my own anger. And I believe that in healing the somatic body of trauma, I believe that allowing that to come out and express, especially in character where it's safe, it's not mine, but it's from my body. So my nervous system can actually feel that and explode that and be, in a way, make space for that so that it is eventually a therapeutic process. And then if I got cast in a role where I'm playing an angry person, I don't have to be frightened. I don't have to indicate it. I was like, yes, I know now how to do that. And I know how to come back safely to a restabilized. That's definitely part of the lucid body work. We have a very strong technique now of how to restabilize the nervous system.
I'm forgetting what you call it now, but sometimes after two actors have had an intense interchange, you say make nice or...
Right now I say neutralize the space. And neutralize the space because that space between two actors is what I call active space. It's a high stakes relationship. It's push-pull. I cannot let you go. I will keep using tactics to keep you inside this active space. And I will use any tactic that is going to serve the character. Of course, that can be quite brutal. So then at the end, palm to palm, or in this COVID day, palm to energetic palm, like 3 feet, 6 feet away, but still it's active space. You neutralize it, meaning I'm looking at you now and I'm saying, I was acting, are you okay? We're checking in. I am erasing that. I'm neutralizing that energy between us. So it doesn't follow us or me.
Outside.
It could be that also something you did, your tactic was so good, I really got triggered. Right? We as people get triggered and we have to see it, know it, and then figure out how to rebalance.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things about what you do because I feel like that's missing in a lot of rooms. And it's just, I think it's dangerous. I think you have to have an awareness of it. And also, if you know that that process is in place, I feel like it allows you to really go for it.
I think that's my goal, is to train actors to learn what is playable and what is not playable for them. Mm. If someone has been very abused in their past life as an actor, until they work with that sense of victim abuse, it's very dangerous for them to play that. You know, take 20, take 21, go, go, go. I mean, I really think that the places where we are bruised and wounded is like a neon sign for a director or a casting director. They'd be like, ooh, that person's perfect because they see the wound.
Yeah.
You, the actor, actually have to take advocacy for yourself. And that's what I feel I want my actors to be in a room where they say, okay, this I see now. I get triggered. It's very hard for me to come back. I want to work with it until I then can say, yes, now this is playable. I can go into that movie and play a rape victim because I know that I can come back out safely. It's not going to trigger me into a month-long trauma. So playable is a good word. Is it playable for you?
You mentioned when talking about the shadow exercise to choosing the male executive because it's further away from you. And that comes up in the book too, in terms of the female and the male energies, the yin and the yang. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how you use that?
Yes. Do you have the second edition?
I don't. I have the... Oh, look, tell me about the second edition.
I tell you because I think we're in a different time period. So I have taken gender off of the centers. I used to be like root and third and fifth, all the expressive outward are the male centers and the female, the more yin, the more inward are, the more feminine. Well, that's limiting. That's in a way connecting masculine to only the aggressive things. So now I do use the yin and yang, but I've taken feminine and masculine off that because the feminine energy could be extremely exploded root, right? That feminine has bite to it if it goes. So the yin and yang of it then, that which is expressive outward versus that which is receiving. I think that's what the second chakra is, our pelvis, and that is many times receiving information from the other so that I can be in tune with you, intimately in tune, whether you're my husband, my child, or my father. I am my physical body. Carolyn Mace calls it clairsentience. Clairsentience, it's a physical intuitive ability we all have. And then heart, same thing. There's a listening, there's a compassion, there's a receiving energy more. Third chakra is the ego, and that third chakra is more, it's power oriented. I'm forgetting the voice teacher's name. She talks about a second circle.
Oh, Patsy Rodenberg.
Patsy Rodenberg talks about it. When I read her book, she talks about first circle, second, and third. I said, oh, she's talking about imploded third and exploded third and balance. Mm-hmm. Imploded third would be the first circle, which is I don't want anyone to see me. I don't have confidence in myself. I hope no one notices I'm here. Second circle is I am present. I'm humble, but I'm holding my space. And then third would be that exploded third, which is I've walked into the room. I am in charge. I'm the leader. Pay attention. So the third is that making an impact on the environment. And the second is the antenna are taking in the environment.
Yeah, I love that. So, like, for example, I have a strong distaste for...
Aha, the shadow's coming up.
Shallow people, lazy people, superficial people, people who don't want to tell the truth. So if I were to start building a shadow character, it would be someone who's...
You just gave many adjectives. We'd probably have to choose... One or two. I mean, if you say, you know, superficial or, I mean, not telling, my mind immediately went to this white fragility we're dealing with right now. The sense I've so learned so much from that book called White Fragility, but also Rezma Menachem's, My Grandmother's Hands. I don't know if you've.
No, I'm partway through White Fragility, but I don't know that second book at all.
It's about racialized trauma in black bodies, but it talks about white bodies and it talks about police bodies, but it talks about ancestral trauma, trauma that is passed down. And so let's just go back to one of your characters. Let's say you said somebody superficial, or not telling the truth.
Like plastic surgery is something I judge harshly.
So someone has had their face lifted?
People overly vain.
People overly vain. Okay. Women or men or both?
Both.
So do you want your shadow character to be a man or a woman?
I think a woman's probably more interesting.
Yeah, I think that's... In fact, I think your shadow character might have been a woman now that I'm...
Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm having a flashback. So a female who does a facelift or Botox or...
Let's say all that.
All boobs done.
Spends all her money on that, yeah.
And very vain, yeah. I think we share that shadow. Okay, so then what kind of job does she have? Let's build a biography for her. I mean, she could be a top executive. She could be working in a department store at the makeup counter. She could be.
Yeah, I think she maybe either a politician or works for tabloids, has some sort of power, yields some sort of influence. I think that's more triggering for me. Someone who is a force in the world.
Yeah.
You know, formidable in some way.
Okay, so you'd have to name it. You could say, what did you say? Not a politician, but the person.
Maybe a first lady or a tabloid executive or the executive of I don't know, reality television show that some of reality TV I love, but.
Okay, executive of a reality television show. So we'd have to dial it back and do a biography of her. And that biography is going to somehow have to support that vanity so that you can play it with a full heart. You can't play this woman with judgment. So dial it back and think, like, where did she come from? Did she come from a poor environment? Did she come from an environment where her mother was rough on her because she wasn't pretty enough?
Yeah, I think she's maybe from Texas. She was maybe put in pageants. She was told she wasn't pretty enough. From her mother, her father told her she had to accomplish X, Y, and Z.
Maybe had an eating disorder because she was always trying to be thinner.
And maybe had a sibling who was outshining her. Yeah.
Then you start to get the wounds that are driving this person who is ultimately quite successful now. She's feeling that she has taken those challenges and done something with them. So that when you play that, you would play that with this sense of self-confidence. Now, the juice of that would be the child need, which is, please love me as I am.
Right.
And, you know, if we really got to that painful place of a little girl who's not seen for just who she is, just how she eats cereal. I think parenting so much has to do with if at least one adult figure in every child's life looks at them and mirrors them and says, you are perfect, what you are doing, then there's a chance at a healthy, but few people get that.
Have you seen Succession at all?
Yes.
Oh. I just finished season one the other day. And in that last scene.
Remind me, because I watched
it. So Jeremy Strong character, spoiler alert, had, you know, the accident in the car with the lake.
Yes.
And then scene with his father. I mean, just visually, if that wasn't child need, I don't know what was. He literally turned into a 4-year-old on the screen. And it was stunning.
And that little 4-year-old, I thought, was visible throughout his whole performance. That's a thing.
It was just more layered, right? And then it reached its full.
When it reached, I think this is a definition of good acting. It's like when someone has a very extreme action in the movie or play, and when they do that violent, whatever they do, you feel, you, the audience, feel you've seen that part of them the whole time. You didn't know it, but you're not surprised, like, where did that come from? Right? It's like in The Seagull, when the son finally kills himself. It's like part of you've seen that throughout everything from the beginning of the play. You don't know it, but you've seen that, like, imploded one, that sense of why am I living, the whole time, that actor.
You know, funny enough, I was actually talking about The Seagull with somebody yesterday, and they quoted, Carl Beery, you know Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was quoting somebody, but he said that, you know, if Constantine could just cry, he wouldn't have killed himself.
Yes. Oh, that's, That's a truth right there.
So I think that's what you're speaking to too. We watch in the play him hold all that in.
Yeah.
And then it's not sustainable.
And I think there's something about a held emotional state like that, that the audience, even though, because I think the audience is, we're so in tune on a physical level without knowing we are, that we are almost, there's probably part of us suspended hoping that he cries. We want to see the completion of something. I mean, I've never thought of it that way, but I think like when I think about that play and every time I've seen it, and it's like you were hoping he'll break down and just weep. He has that minor breakdown with his mother, a little bit when she's bandaging his head, sort of softens there a little bit. But if he had kept breaking down and just letting himself be in that puddle of, I feel like shit, maybe he could have gotten himself back together.
We mentioned briefly our country facing its shadow in these times. Is there anything you want to say about that?
Well, if I see the three things, Me Too, Black Lives Matter, and He Who I Have Trouble Naming. So in the Me Too movement, God, about time, all of those women and men finally came forward like the dam broke, one person's, you know, and confessed to the abuse that was happening. And then slowly, suddenly, that shadow of sexual abuse throughout all of theater and Hollywood emerges. I mean, it's just a stunning emergence of shadow. And in the papers, and finally, everybody's seeing it for what it is, those high Hollywood execs. So here we all are enjoying these movies where underneath it has been all this abuse.
Yeah.
To me, that was such a stunning, and is, I'm very involved with the intimacy, you know, guide to stage intimacy. And so to keep that moving forward, is we have to be on task. It has to continue. It can't be like, oh, that happened and then we'll forget about it and then it's all going to happen again. With Black Lives Matter, I mean, just facing my own whiteness, I feel like that ancestral shadow of not only the white people that were abusing white people in the Middle Ages, they came to America with that traumatic abuse on their own bodies and then started abusing someone else, you know, someone they could call different, creating this term called race. So the shadow of racism, to me, it feels like it's finally coming forward. It really, and institutions, and we're talking about it. Everyone's talking about it. And I feel hopeful and excited that even though there's a lot of work to be done, it is coming out. The books are coming. People are talking. We are facing ourselves in a way that is like facing one shadow.
And to tie the first issue, Me Too, back to the Lucid Body work in class, the most recent work I did with you was a weekend with the wonderful Joseph Serravo. We called it Lucid Shakespeare.
Yes.
And I was working on Angelo from Measure for Measure, which is very much, you know, a play about Me Too. And I think there's a reason it's being done so much and that it's, I think, being respected in a new way within the classical canon. But listeners, if you don't know, Measure for Measure, essentially Angelo he describes himself as a saint, a virtuous man to the extreme. And he is overtaken with unbelievable lust for this nun because she is so virtuous. And I'm bringing it up because while it was not a full shadow exercise, I think coming back to the work after many years with just, you know, having lived life a bit and becoming a little bit braver, jumping in, you said, what's his shadow? And just allowing my lust and violence to just run rampant and then close it in, you know, so much beyond acting well, I was like, if I was going to say men, but I should say humans, if we're not afraid to take that out and look at it, like I was a little shocked at how greedy my lust can be. But if I don't look at that, I might do something.
Yeah.
If I have to take it out, because the more you suppress it, the more it's going to.
Exactly.
You know.
The shadow will have its way with you. The shadow will find its way out. And I know from experience too, if you don't face it, it will come out in behavior that could, you are so surprised. I don't know how that happened. So I think that's a lot of the fear of shadow. That's why I love doing it, because I think it's healthy for our society and for communities.
Yes, and actors and non-actors alike.
We are human beings and we all have lust and we all have greed and we all have revenge. We all have these things that are, this is why it's like the lower body is our impulsive, more survival base, root, second, and third, but the upper body is trying, has that consciousness of what it means to be a good citizen, to be a part of a community, to be polite and respectful. But those two are at war constantly. And so the playing of those lower impulses for an actor, it's just such good material, because then the hiding of it is what you're doing on stage. Ron Van Leeuw always talked about it, that sense of the divide itself is almost more important than the conflict with you and another character. It's a conflict within.
Yeah. And in that case, I found it in that moment. I remember it so clearly. It became so much easier to act. There was less to act because all I had to do was cover what was going on.
And to be like everything in your power, not to just pounce on her.
Right.
It was beautiful, beautifully done. That sense of, yeah, there's got to be admitting to one's own lust and not being frightened of it is a thing, right?
Well, it's a thing. And I think it's why we're in so much of the trouble we're in.
Yeah.
As even as this has been going on, the amount, I thankfully have never had anything horrific happen to me, but the amount of aggressive hitting on, the amount of comments, the amount of invitations, I, as a gay man and dancer in the musical theater world, I mean, it's all over the place. It's all over the place. And it's something I've been unpacking in this time too.
When I was a young dancer, and then got into directing in my company, it was all over the place. Hey, baby, sit in my lap, you know.
And in the dance world, we're often not talking about all the things we just talked about. And you do have attractive people and they're in tight clothes. Like, so if there's not an awareness of that, yeah, you may feel things, you might get turned on and that's okay.
Yeah. I miss the dance world. I'd love to go back and do some lucid body work with the dance world, because just think if there were these tools in place where after, because your hands are all over each other in the dance. I mean, I'm small, so I was always being lifted. There were hands all over me to neutralize that space and to check and say, how are you today? Is there any place? Can we still do that lift? How do you feel about that? Is my hand in the right place?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just the sense of respect for your own body and for the body of someone else's is something I feel extremely committed to. And yeah, the dance world, I'm sure the intimacy people will get in there too.
So you are teaching online currently?
Yeah, I'm teaching both. I'm teaching in my studio. Lucid Body House is still open. The dance community has found it. And so we have our 10 people only in mass, but a lot of choreographers are in there.
Wonderful.
And I'm teaching a hybrid class right now. It's advanced text where half the people are online. I'm also teaching at NYU, which is hybrid. So some of my classes are virtual and some of my classes are live. And some of my rehearsals right now are live, but with all of the restrictions in place. So none of the actors can come within 6 feet. In class, I have 4 people in the classroom with masks. I am teaching some master classes at the studio if anyone's interested in tapping into the work. It's like a 1-day.
Well, I highly recommend it. You're brilliant. Your work is brilliant. I recommend it to everyone, and it will be in the show notes. You're one of a kind, and I'm honored to have had you on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And that was my episode with Faye Simpson. All her links are in the show notes if you would like to work with her. The Lucid Body is very, very physical work, so you can't really just talk about it. You have to do it to reap the benefits. That being said, I loved my talk with Faye. The shadow is obviously a huge issue, and so we can only scratch the surface on a short podcast, but I think it's really relevant to these times, and it's so helpful to actors and artists. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit that subscribe button and leave us a rating or review. It only takes a few seconds. It's super easy, and it really helps us secure future guests and get the podcast out to more people. Next week is Thanksgiving. Where did 2020 go? I will have a Thanksgiving episode for you. Until then, have a beautiful week, and I'll talk to you soon.